Iowa everywhere.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. ArmorAll, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We'd love to tell you what this podcast is about, but the truth is, we don't know. The CW Pod, at home on Iowa Everywhere. From the Channel Seed Studios, this is Iowa Everywhere.
Channel Seed, seedsmanship at work.
What is going on, guys? Fired up for today's CW Pod as the World of Outlaws Sprint Cars. We're going to explain to you what the hell this is if you're not a huge racing fan, but I think you're going to like the pod anyways because I got a cool guy with me. He lives in Altoona. He's originally from California, but the World of Outlaws, the big sprint car series, is in Knoxville this weekend. I thought it would be a good time to ask my buddy Gio Selzy. I always want to put the the shush in there. Yep. Welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming in the studio.
Yeah, thank you. I like it. It's almost done, but
yeah, we're getting there.
I didn't get to see the old one, so this is all new to me. I like it.
Yeah, no, we're getting there. You got like a kind of like a home race this weekend, right?
Is it? Absolutely.
Do you consider this home now?
Yeah, Knoxville's my favorite racetrack.
Really?
All of them, absolutely. I mean, the crown jewel of them all, the Knoxville Nationals, is here. So it's a place I've wanted to be successful at and have had some wins at. And now being from living in Altoona, it's definitely a home race.
Okay, so I'm not going to do the like standard interview stuff because I got like a million other things. And I'm trying to. My audience probably gets a little bit annoyed with me because I'm always trying to shove the racing thing down their throat. But when it's a passion, it's a passion. You grew up like me in a very different way. You had a dad who raced, brother who races. I grew up just like going as a fan and then turn into a pit reporter somehow. And now here I am today. But I feel like this whole thing's growing. If it's like the F1 craze that we're in right now, like COVID hit and you guys are like all of a sudden like Dirt Vision and Flow are like starting to take off and all that. Do you feel that like in the driver's seat that this sport's getting bigger?
You know, what's crazy is if anything, I feel like COVID was obviously terrible, but it almost boosted our pay-per-view stuff to a level that no one thought was possible. I mean, our first race back was Knoxville, a one-night show in May of 2020. There was not a single person in the stands. We couldn't even gather for the driver's meeting. They had the driver's meeting over the PA. And it was so weird not having just the hustle and the bustle of people not signing autographs.
Yeah.
From that moment on, that was a record night for Dirt Vision. And from then on, Flow bought Speed Shift, which, like I said, is now Flow, and it is completely exploded. I think having those races on pay-per-view online, having the yearly subscription that they have and the following they have now is incredible. It's taken our sport to the next level for sure. And you know, with elevated purses, elevated races, it's truly, you know, blown our sport up.
Do you feel like, I mean, just something like a, cause you do your own like merchandise and like, so when people go to the racetrack, if you're a fan, you've never been to a dirt race, you'll see these like trailers. And oftentimes, like, wives and moms or girlfriends will be the ones managing it and stuff. So it's not like NASCAR, who like just outsources everything to Fanatics or whatever. Have you seen a huge boost in that since COVID?
So it's been huge. So how it works, give you a background on the World of Outlaws series. So the World of Outlaws has 14 platinum members, what they call it. So they run the whole 87 race schedule. They run every single race. We are contracted to run their races. We get paid to, and we cannot run any other series without permission. So we are allowed to run 4 races that are not World of Outlaw races, which is new this year.
Yep.
So those platinum members are essentially World of Outlaws contracted drivers. So for the merchandise side of things, only those platinum members can sell at World of Outlaw races. barring a few of them, like
the
Knoxville Nationals. It's called Open Midway.
So, like, if Danny Dietrich shows up at a World of Outlaws race, he can't bring a trailer.
Cannot sell.
Okay.
Unless they are changing the rules. Our biggest problem with merchandise is room in our midways. Some of the facilities cannot hold 20, 30 t-shirt trailers.
Yeah.
So, some tracks can. Knoxville, Eldora, Williams Grove, and those racetracks, they're letting us what's called an open midway. So, there's certain purse rules, or like I said, if they have the space for it, they'll allow them to sell, which they're getting more lenient on their rules. But essentially, the normal rules for an outlaw race are only platinum members are allowed to sell.
But like online, I mean, is it blown up?
It's insane. It is unbelievable. I took it over. I had never really worried about it in the past because I was working on my own race cars. Now getting time, having a full time crew where I can worry about other stuff, driving merchandise with my girlfriend doing it. It's insane. I mean, I can't believe that people still want to buy my stuff. It's still a little bit weird walking through somewhere, or walking in public and seeing a Gio Selzy shirt or getting recognized. I'm still not very, very not used to it. So, and being in Iowa and having all the local sponsors like we have, it seems to be more popular. If someone's wearing a Jacob Allen hat or whatever in a grocery store and they're like, hey, what's up, Gio? And I'm like, oh, hey. And I'm like, what? There's a race fan here. It's weird to see, you know.
You have to come see my home office sometime. I've got a diecast problem.
I broke them all when I was little, so
I got a major problem. Hundreds.
Well, you're gonna have to add one more to your collection.
I already. Whenever you put it in the mail, buddy. No. I think it's cool that you guys are all located in Iowa. So explain to me what KCP. Is because that's the race team that you drive for. And it's all a bunch of, the reason we met is because your partners and all this are a bunch of guys that I know through other business ventures and just friends of mine. But this team is housed right here in Des Moines. And explain how this all came together, how you got here.
Yeah. So KCP stands for Custom Concrete Pumping. Which is a concrete pumping shop located in Des Moines, owned by Matt Barbara and Brett Nearing. So that started in 2013. A little backstory, Matt Barbara from Australia is essentially our team manager, runs the team, the day-to-day stuff. Worked on race cars forever in Australia, friends with Kerry, Ian Madsen, grew up with them. Came from nothing, essentially, worked on race cars, worked his way up from a tire guy all the way to a crew chief. And kind of realized that didn't want to be his career path. Started pumping concrete, worked for Tony Vermeer, which owns another sprint car team that we race against, and then got hooked up with Brett Nearing, eventually starting what's now KCP Racing. So started in 2013. Ian Madsen drove the car for almost 8 years. They parted ways in the middle of 2020, hired me, and it's been this way ever since.
So you're from California.
Yep.
And prior to being here, you're doing ARCA. You're doing some other dirt stuff. You grew up around the drag strips. How'd you get here?
So what's weird is with drag racing, which I love drag racing. I was actually just in Chicago. My buddy Austin Prock still drag races Top Fuel, which my dad's a three-time champion, four-time champion. So with drag racing, there's really no path for kids to do it. You have to be 16 to drag race anything. So a lot of those racers didn't start. My dad went professional at 37 years old.
Oh,
so
wow.
Nowadays, with the changing of the guard, kids are 5 years old in go-karts. You're 16 years old. You're old for stock car racing, dirt racing in that aspect too. So you're starting so much younger now. And my dad thought with dirt racing, he would start us in go-karts, teach us car control and dirt racing. And if we wanted to transition back to drag racing, we always could. And the door is still always open for me to go drag racing if that was a way I wanted to go. But it's not. I mean, I love sprint car racing. That's what I want to do.
Is this what you want to do?
Absolutely. 100%.
You're not one of those guys. I always feel like the young sprint car guys all want to get to NASCAR now because of the success of Larson and some of those guys.
It's enticing. I mean, the money is the only reason they do it. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Because you guys, nobody really likes driving in NASCAR.
No, I think they all hate it. That's why they race sprint cars.
Yeah.
But I got a taste to do it. I partnered with Toyota at the end of 2019, did some midget racing with them, and then ran the full-time ARCA West schedule in 2020. Which was COVID year, obviously. So it changed the dynamic of how my schedule looked. Was probably going to be able to do more testing. I mean, if your aunt had balls, she'd be your uncle. So I could say, if or whatever. But didn't work out, and kind of realized that I didn't want to do that. And at the same time, this team got presented to me. So I was essentially racing a failing stock car team, and a very successful sprint car team was knocking on the door. So kind of had to make the decision to choose what direction I wanted to go, and I chose sprint cars. So the relationship with Toyota didn't end. We actually ran their 410 engine for a while in 2021 and then parted ways there. So sprint car racing is definitely where I want to be.
Okay, so you live in Altoona. Is it because a lot of the like IndyCar guys will just live in Indianapolis and stuff like that. Like if you want to be a big time sprint car driver, which you are, you're seventh in the points in the most prestigious series in the world, is living in central Iowa kind of like home base for that, being that, you know, close to Knoxville?
It's weird. It's such a different dynamic in all sorts of racing, really. Indianapolis is actually a huge hotbed for sprint car racing as well. Pennsylvania is probably the biggest area for sprint car racing in the country, in the world for that matter. So Pennsylvania is really the only area you can essentially have a 9-to-5 job, race on the weekends, and make a living doing it. If you're a professional race car driver, the majority of the professional teams, the outlaw teams, are in Pennsylvania. Indianapolis.
Really?
As
I didn't know that.
Yep. So you have CJB, Shark Tank, Logan Schuchart Racing, they're both in Pennsylvania. Tony Stewart Racing's in Indianapolis. Casey Kane Racing's in Charlotte. So it's all kind of the Eastern Midwest United States area that they're all located in. There really, excuse me, is not really like a home base area. If there was, I would say it'd be Indianapolis, because there are so many manufacturers. There's engine builders, parts manufacturers, all kinds of stuff between that Indy and that Pennsylvania area.
So I grew up in Southwest Iowa, which is total rural. Like, we didn't have sprint cars. We had late models were our big deal, but it's more like stock cars, hobby stocks. Mods weren't even a big deal. We didn't do anything open wheel.
Yep.
We're like redneck USA down there. I always tell people that like late models are more like country music and sprint cars are more rock and roll.
I feel that.
Is that fair?
I think so. Yeah.
How do you view like your form, I guess? Because it's not like, and I'm not criticizing my people who go to late model races or anything like that. I'm just saying it's just a different vibe.
It is weird. The fans are definitely, I like late models. They call them, what do they call them? Push and flip. That's what they call sprint cars when they want to make fun of us. And
I actually, at one point, I was selling a t-shirt that says race cars have fenders.
Yeah, and people just, and it's fun. I mean, I love watching late model racing. That's probably the only other dynamic of racing other than drag racing that I will watch and actually like tune in to really want to watch it or watch highlights or whatever.
Yeah.
I love the drivers. All the personalities are super cool. But it's weird. You know, I don't know if it's just kind of a shit talking thing just for fun or what, but like I said, I respect both disciplines. I mean, they race for more money than we do, if anything, but definitely two different dynamics, but two just as professional, you know, racings.
Yeah. Yeah. We're also noticing now in this country, at least, I feel like the Americans are kind of, we're ruining Formula One for the rest of the world. Cause we all want, they've got their own thing going on over there in like Europe and stuff. Right. Yep. And they've loved it for all these. So this Netflix series comes out and now you've got all these people who are watching Formula One and stuff. Have you gotten in on that craze? Do you watch any of that stuff?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I have the F1 TV thing where I'll set my alarm. If it's 6 a.m, I got F1 TV on.
Nice.
I'm half asleep. My eyes are crusty. And my girlfriend's mad at me because she's trying to sleep because we just drove all night. But I have the freaking F1 on. So I love it. And F1 Drive to Survive is what got me started in it. Me and my brother watched it. It's amazing. There's a PR guy from the Outlaws that does some stuff. He's from London and is kind of involved in the, not involved in F1, but involved in that whole dynamic of the PR guys. And he said that, you know, Drive to Survive has completely changed the fan dynamic and the aspect of F1. It's unbelievable.
Kind of feel like you guys are, I mean, not on that trajectory. That's a worldwide thing. Mm-hmm. But there's just more ways to like, I mean, something like we're doing right now. Were these just people who, there's probably a lot of people watching and listening to this who didn't know that there was a World of Outlaws sprint car team based out of Des Moines.
Right. And that's like, I feel like my entire career, I've run what they call a true outlaw schedule. So we race All-Stars, Outlaws, local Knoxville, wherever we want to go, essentially. And this year in 2023, we've decided to go full-time outlaw racing. And we've only been doing it since February. And it's truly taken our team to the next level performance-wise, t-shirt sales wise, you know, publicity wise, to be a World of Outlaws team. When a fan thinks of sprint car racing and they don't know much about it, they recognize the World of Outlaws name.
I was going to go there with you. Like, did you enjoy the freedom, or do you like having the structure of knowing, you know, this is where I got to be because of the outlaw schedule, but where in the past you could kind of just pick and choose?
You know, it's a double-edged sword. I think running that pick and choose schedule, you know, the Outlaws have an 87 race schedule, which with rainouts, it's about 75 races. This is what it comes out to be, about 70, 75. So with your true outlaw schedule, when we make the schedule, we have the All-Star schedule, like I said, the Knoxville schedule, the PA local schedule, the World of Outlaws schedule. They're all lined up, and we pick out which weekend we want to go to. There will be a weekend with that schedule where we have four different options to go to that are all within 5 hours of us. So when that Wednesday or Thursday rolls around, it looks like rain in Knoxville, looks like rain in PA. Okay, Wisconsin looks pretty good. Let's truck up there. So
you're playing meteorologist too.
Yeah, and that's the worst thing to do, because wherever I decide to go, it's going to rain. There's no question about it. So it was more stressful running a pick-and-choose schedule, because you're racing that weekend no matter what. Where the World of Outlaws, if this weekend looks like crap for weather, you're canceled. You can go out on a boat and do whatever, or fly home. You know, I felt like it kind of warned me not being able to fly home as much, not being able to see my family as much, because you're racing Tuesdays, you're racing Wednesdays. Hey, they're promoting a race on Thursday. We're racing Thursday. I mean, you race more off the Outlaws than you do on the Outlaws.
Yeah, that makes sense. How often does your family get to Iowa?
So they flew in yesterday. My parents are here. My brother doesn't get to come out as much. He raced out here for a while, has two kids now, just had another one in April. So he's busy being a dad, got the dad bod going pretty good. So no, he comes out as much as he can. He hasn't been out, I don't think this year yet. He came out last year, a couple races. So they do as much as they can. But again, with weather, it's hard to predict. It seems like when they plan a big time to come to a race, the weather looks like crap.
Do you like living in Iowa?
I love it. Growing up in California, everybody asks, you know, how'd you live in California? But it's normal with traffic everywhere and people everywhere. And it's funny, my girlfriend's from a town of 800 people, and Fresno has 600,000 people where I grew up. So bit of a different dynamic where we're from. But I like the more laid back, everything spread out. You're not really lacking anything in Iowa. I mean, you have your Casey's and your come and goes and your movie theaters, or, you know, everyone thinks Iowa, okay, well, you live in the middle of a cornfield, but it's the same as California in a way.
It's kind of a farce when they do that. I mean,
it is for sure.
But if you're where I'm from though,
is legitimately a cornfield.
If you ever get rained out, you come back and go to my local track with me.
Okay,
like it's literally cornfields off the backstretch. I was telling you, because we don't have sprints, because we don't have fences. Like you guys it would be a disaster.
Yeah.
To have you guys out there. How'd you get the nickname Hot Sauce?
You know, my dad's a character. I had nicknames. Geo Storm was a nickname. Nicknames that made absolutely no sense that he gave me when I was little. I truly don't know why. I need to make up some name or some reason that I have that name.
You don't have one. No, there's no reason.
No, it stuck when I was little. I had it on my fire suit when I was little, and it kind of went away. And then my brother or somebody called me Hot Sauce a couple years ago, and then Johnny Gibson, the announcer for the Outlaws, got a hold of it, and now it's kind of blown up. Now we have T-shirts, all kinds of stuff.
Boy, that Johnny Gibson's an icon.
Yeah.
Jeez.
There is nobody more dedicated that truly loves the sport like he does. It's amazing.
He hasn't missed a race in like, this was a big deal last year because he was calling a race and he could barely talk.
Yes, yep.
Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. I said he was announcing a race and you couldn't even understand him. You know, he would not give up, not giving up the microphone, which is great.
Yeah, because I remember even when I was a little boy, I told you earlier we'd go out to Eagle, which you were just at, which is one of my favorite tracks in the world. And Gibson would be out. I mean, I'm talking when I'm like five.
Yeah.
And that guy was like an icon back. Do all the guys just love him?
Yeah. I mean, he's almost like there's I've never seen anybody else. So there's nobody else like, oh, well, the guy before him was better. That's the guy. He's been the guy forever. So it's so automatic of associating Johnny Gibson with the World of Outlaws.
When you guys are traveling around, so there's 14 of you. Mm-hmm. Is it like a family feel, or do you just want to just beat everybody's ass because you're just tired of them by the end of the year?
You know, very much both. I think, you know, this is my first year, obviously full-time with the Outlaws. Last year I had a t-shirt van, which we went to about 30 Outlaw shows, 30 races in general, sorry, that we could sell at. So about 5 or 6 Outlaw shows, 20 All-Star races. So I wasn't really full-time on the road, you could say, driving to every race. Now I am driving a one-ton Chevy truck with a trailer behind it. So that means flat tires. That means all kinds of problems with the generator not working. So when your helmet goes on, I don't care. You know, you'd crash your grandma to win a race. It doesn't really matter. But on the other side of it, you know, you see someone stop on the side of the road with a flat tire or someone has a problem, anybody is willing to help. You know, me and Hunter Schoenberg, I don't like him. I'm not a fan of him, but his motorhome and t-shirt trailer caught on fire going down 35 north. And I saw it in the distance. I saw some smoke. was driving down the highway and I saw it was him. So I pulled off, stopped, called him, hey, are you all right? Like, you never want to see anybody get hurt like that. So I think you can hate someone on the racetrack, but in the end, you never want to see something bad happen to somebody. So it is, as goofy as it sounds, it is truly a traveling family.
It's the one thing that's weird, not weird, it's cool about racing is somebody has a flat tire. It's like they could be battling you in points. Yep. And their crew will like come over and help you put on a new tire.
Oh, and that's what's crazier is the work area. Like you're just it's amazing. You know, you see David Gravel crashes, who's in the battle with you know Brad Sweet and Carson Macedo, and you see All Baugh jerseys, you see Napa jerseys, you see Big Game jerseys, you see KCP jerseys, you see everybody helping just because you pay it forward. Because when your shit gets junked, you want more hands helping you.
Yeah,
you know, and you never, I mean, you never want to win a championship because the guy crashed and couldn't get out of the work area. You know, you want to race wheel to wheel for a championship.
Okay, so you guys are kind of nuts. Like, I mean, of all the, honestly, of all the racing disciplines, I feel like you guys are the most crazy. Do you agree?
I think it's a compliment, yes.
I mean, really, like, you're flying around. There's, like, nothing between. The cars are so light. Yep. The tires are so big. Yep. Like, the wing, like, it allows you to go speeds through the corners that no other discipline of racing, like even like Formula One, it's like those guys are, what they do is dangerous, right. But they're also in a cocoon, and you are to an extent. Right. How do you keep yourself sharp, I guess, when it comes to that?
You know, it's tough for us because, you know, I get asked from people that, you know a lot less about racing than you do, but, you know, how do you practice? Like, do you go testing a lot? And for us, dirty air is such a huge aspect of our type of racing. And dirty air essentially is when you're the first car out there, you have clean air. No one's in front of you because our big 5x5 wings on top create a wake behind you that makes the car ill handling. So if you're starting 10th, 12th, 13th in a race and you go into turn one, your car is not going to act like the guy in first is going to. So for us, testing, we are testing every single time we race. We race 80, 90 times a year. So testing for us when you're by yourself is almost useless because you can get your car perfectly set up when you're by yourself. You get behind two or three cars, it's going to be a very ill-handling race car. So you might see guys on a night where they qualify first, they win their heat race, they win the dash, they win the main. This is the best car I've ever driven. It's awesome. And then you might draw an 8 in a dash and it's a complete shitbox because you're behind those race cars.
Yeah.
So, you know, we call
that dash pisses me off, Gio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're my guy, right? Yeah. So when I watch the dash and like you run really good in your heat race and then you get 7, like it just, it pisses me off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pull it back down there.
Yeah. It does. And that's, I feel like I used to get really upset over dash draws, but in the aspect, you look at it, if your car's not good enough to win from eighth, you don't deserve to win. If you have to be on the front row to win a race, chances are your shit's probably not that good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Your race car's probably not that fast.
So I have a theory, like Kyle Larson, he gets suspended from NASCAR, he got fired, whatever. Yep. He comes and starts winning all these sprint car races, which he had done. Like, it wasn't anything new, but it kind of turned into this new thing, but he keeps doing it. Is it like, I'm talking like a motor skills. Cause you see like on Drive to Survive, right? Speak to some of the more casual fans out there. You see the guys like, you know, all the hand-eye coordination type drills that they're doing before they get in there.
Yep.
Do you think Larson's better at NASCAR now because he's staying sharp by running late models and sprints all throughout the week? Is there something to that?
I really think there is for him. I think he's an alien. Like, I don't think he's from this planet. I mean, he is the best driver we'll ever see in our lifetimes, if not maybe the best driver that's ever lived.
Wow.
in a race car. There's no question in my mind. Anybody that disagrees with that, just look at the stats. You know, look what he's done. He gets in a modified. He drives a lawnmower and he wins a race, you know?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what he gets in. He's proven that and you could say he's in the best equipment, whatever. I mean, I drove the 57 car for a while. He runs in the sprint car and I sucked. I quit after three races. I couldn't do it.
I didn't know that you drove that
car. Yeah, no one does. Cause I was so fat, so terrible, you know? So
I had no idea.
Yeah. So I drove it in the beginning of 2018 when I was 16 years old and it just didn't work out. We weren't seeing eye to eye and stuff. I was very, very young. So it was really too young to be in that aspect. But anyway, back to Larson.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a freak. I think, for me personally, running a sprint car every weekend helps me. Not racing midgets, because I've run midgets, I've run stock cars. It took me longer to transition back to what I needed to do. It took a night almost to get back up to speed in the car I was driving.
Wow.
When I was switching back and forth. Him, it's one lap of hot laps, and he's quick time. which is unbelievable, you know, for anyone to do that.
Well, I was blown away. Do you remember his first night in a late model out at Port Royal? I think he won.
Yeah. And it was a Lucas Oil Race.
It was a Lucas show. Yeah.
Yep.
Like, that's my jam. I'd rather watch a late model race than an NFL game. Yep. Okay. And I was just so floored when he did that.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. It's
such a different car.
Yep.
Do you think, like, let's say if Kyle Larson quit right now and he wanted to go run Formula One and he had a decent car, would he be successful?
Man, that's a $1 million question, isn't it?
I'd love to see him try.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, I've raced 1 year in stock cars, which was like 20 races. So I don't have very, very little stock car experience. But with his front car, you know, on dirt, there's a lot of 2 feet throttle control. I mean, there isn't in pavement racing too, but not quite as much. I feel like with a sprint car, you know, you can have a subpar race car. If you have a very good driver, he can get it to the next level. I felt or I experienced in stock car racing, if you have a 10th place car, you might get it to 7th or 8th, but you're not going to win a race. I feel like sometimes the fastest race car more so is going to win a pavement race compared to a dirt race.
Yeah.
In my eyes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there may be something to the sharpness thing. Because in another theory I have is Kyle Busch, like he doesn't win as much at NASCAR anymore, but because they put the limits on him, right?
Yep.
He used to run like the trucks and the Xfinity, and then like I felt like he was better because
there's
no doubt.
I mean, if you have 100 laps, 300-400 laps of the racetrack before anybody else is even on it, it has to help. It's not going to hurt you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So like at the beginning of the Outlaw season, when you guys go out to Florida in like February, are you all rusty?
A little bit. Yeah. I think sometimes like my seats are fitted to my back, my lower back, my butt, my hips, all that stuff. Everything is fitted perfectly to where I am, what size I am. And I think when you're out of the car for a while, you get in and it's just the subconscious, like, oh, this doesn't feel quite right. Like, have I gained a pound or two, or have I lost some weight, or, why is my helmet not feel quite right? But once you get in the repetition of getting in the car a lot, it's all very, very automatic. But to answer your question, I think I was a bit rusty. You get a practice session, a practice night at Evolution, to kind of get yourself back up to speed. But it took me probably 3 full seasons to race a half mile and not feel like, holy shit, I'm going really fast. Like to have stuff slow down where you can really realize what's going on.
Okay, so this is all I know.
Yep.
I wish that I had been in a car before, but I don't. Yep. But I do play the simulators in those games, and I'm terrible at the half miles. Mm-hmm. I can't control it.
Right.
So that does translate, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think.
Put me on a quarter mile and I can compete.
Rip it, yep.
Put me on a, and I'm a disaster.
Yeah, and I think, being from California, there are no half miles. There was 1 half mile, Calistoga. The weeds are as tall as you and me now. It's shut down. I got the race there twice, luckily, which is cool. I got to see it. But California is the bull ring, rough racetracks, high banked, that aspect of racing. You get out here, everywhere's slick, everywhere's big. Everywhere you have to, you know, really have a good race car, a good motor to compete.
And the dirt's different.
Very different. I mean, in California, everywhere, like I said, it is wet, a lot of grip. Out here, I mean, you hot lap one or two cars, it's blowing dust, you know?
Yeah, you see that all the time back home.
Yep.
We were blowing dust in hot laps last Saturday when I was there.
Yep.
Okay, that's good stuff. What are you doing when you're not racing?
Think about racing?
I love it.
No,
my kind of guy.
Man, I don't do a whole lot else. I really enjoy not racing, though. You know, I enjoy my downtime. I'm really good at doing nothing. I mean, I guess I'm on the couch with the best of them. So in the off season, you know, typically we go to Australia, December and January, but with COVID really affected Australia a lot.
Yeah, what the hell's with the Australia thing? Like it,
you know,
it, you guys, because we got on Dirt Vision, you can like watch that track. Yep, it keeps me going.
Perth. Yep. So Australia's summer is our winter, obviously. So their racing season essentially is from October to about April. So their big races are December, January. So in our off season, typically, before COVID, a lot of guys would go over there. You race for 2 months. You come back home. It's kind of a mini vacation deal, and it keeps you fresh in the race car, because if you're racing a sprint car, when nobody else is, you're going to be better than them when you come back. So COVID affected it a lot, still is affecting it. Prices are extremely high.
Really?
The purses haven't really gone up. Their dollar is not worth very much. So you're paying $500 or $600 for one regular tire, and their dollar is worth less. So you're really paying like $900 for a regular tire, American. So it's very tough to have teams survive over there.
Here's the thing I've never understood about the economics of your sport. And I'm talking probably more late models than what you're doing specifically with the Outlaws, because you're under contract and there's a certain guarantee of what you know you're going to make. But with some of these guys, really what you did last year, I guess. When I was a kid 25 years ago, it was like, oh, 10,000 to win. And that was like a really big deal. And those really, I mean, they have gone up, but not incredibly. But gas has gone up. You know, it's harder to, everything's more expensive. Right. I'm always curious about the economics of those guys who, you know, who aren't part of like the actual series. I just don't know how they do it sometimes.
Well, I can give you some advice. If you want to make money, don't own a race team. That's the you know, gist of it. I think.
Well, you just broke my heart.
I know, right? So that right there with the diesel money, like you said, is, I feel, probably the main reason the High Limit Series was even created. Because
real quick, let's explain the High Limit Series. So this is Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet, multi-time World of Outlaw champion. They created this new series with Flow Media. It's a media company to give higher paying races to drivers to reward them, basically, right?
During the week. They're all midweek shows.
Yep. That's exactly. So they don't compete head to head with the Outlaws. Nope.
And they're in regions where the Outlaws are at. So essentially where the majority of those teams are, that's where they schedule races, whether it's in Nebraska, like it was now, or in Knoxville. So a very close race for them. So they're trying to elevate the purses for non-outlaw races, essentially. Because, you know, the Outlaws are the best in the world. They essentially hoover up all the big paying races. So it was pretty much to not let other guys win, but let non-outlaws have a better shot at high paying races, pretty much.
Do you like it when Larson is racing at these deals? Because it's like, oh, I get to go up against the best. Or it's like, he's also won like four of them in a row.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that there could be a bit of a downfall to the series. I think Lakeside was a massive event because you had every single outlaw there. So it was, essentially a World of Outlaw race.
Yeah.
You have Donnie Schatz, you have Brad Sweet, all these guys are racing this event. So not saying Larson ran ninth because of that. It was one of his first races of the year. You know, he probably didn't have his stuff quite right. But, you know, if you create a series that Kyle Larson owns and Kyle Larson's winning all the races, I mean, and there is, I can promise you, there is zero bias towards him. They're not fixing these races. Yeah. If that's what people, you know, probably get the idea of that, but it's not that way. Kyle Larson is just better. He's faster. He's smarter than these racers. And he's really better than all of us, but you put the best up against him, he's going to have a harder time beating the World of Outlaws than per se All-Star guys.
Well, I don't like it only in the sense, and I'm glad we have it.
Mm. Yeah, me too.
First and foremost, I'm very grateful that it's here because as a fan, it gives me, you know, every other Tuesday night, I get to watch this, but I'm also like, man, I'd rather see the Geo win the 23K as opposed to the millionaire NASCAR guy.
And like I said, I hope that doesn't put a damper on what they're trying to do, because they are doing a good job. It is not easy to create a series out of thin air and start running it on what's expected to be a professional level with no officiating mistakes, run it perfectly, essentially, you know.
And Flow, I feel like they're a real game. Dirt Vision's been around a while. Yeah. And they've kind of had their, but like Flow is crazy. I was joking with you at lunch. Like, I can watch races in like Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Marshalltown's over. Oh, the Alaska race is getting ready to start.
Yeah. You're not lying.
It's insane.
Yep. And then they have like podcasts on their program. They have other stuff, racing related people talking. I mean, you could literally watch it like all the time. You know, you could have it as a TV channel, you know.
You a sports fan at all?
So I've gotten more into NFL the last year. My girlfriend's a Vikings fan, and my crew chief is like an absolute diehard Chiefs fan. Yeah. He's from St. Joe, Missouri. Yeah, I was right. Yeah. So he's a whatever.
Your girlfriend sounds smart.
Yeah, yeah, she gets it. She's from Minnesota. So
do you like, what do you like? You like to sit on the couch. What are you watching if it's not racing?
Yeah,
Netflix.
Girlfriend binge watch some series pretty hard. We just watched The Last of Us in what felt like a day. I mean, we blow through some
Succession. You watch that?
Succession? Huh, I have not.
Oh, you gotta hit that.
Is it Netflix or what's it on?
That's HBO.
HBO. Okay.
It's insane.
All right.
Succession. I did a whole like recap podcast of that one.
Ozarks. I got into Ozarks.
Oh yeah, Ozarks. Phenomenal. Yeah,
it was good. That was one of my favorite ones. Narcos was good.
You ever been to the Ozarks?
We raced down there.
Lake Ozark.
Yep, and we don't go there. I don't know why. They had a 2-day All-Star show there in July, which was hot as balls. Like, it was probably the hottest race I've ever raced, and there was no one there. I mean, what do you expect when it's 100 degrees outside? But, or the Outlaws would go there in April, and it was like snowing. So it never got momentum to be a big event.
Have you ever raced at the Wheatland, the Lucas Oil Track?
Yep, I ran the Hockett Memorial there in 2017, my first year on the road. Yep,
that's a great facility.
Beautiful facility. I wish the Outlaws would go there.
I've never seen so much concrete at the dirt track. That walking around the pits in that place is insane.
I mean, if you could draw up the perfect dirt track, that's it right there. I mean, you have, like you said, paved pits. There's a car wash on the premises. It's incredible.
So I'm thinking back to your childhood. Dad's a drag racer. How much older is your brother than you?
4.5 years.
So he's probably racing in some capacity when you're a little boy, right? Yeah.
So like, he pretty much paved the way. He got all the bugs worked out of my parents' race team before I got there. So it seemed like he would start in go-karts. He started in go-karts, got a junior sprint, got a micro sprint. And by the time I was coming up, our race cars were already very fast. So that's kind of how my whole career has worked out. You know, started in sprint car racing with my dad. Dennis Roth actually wanted to put me in a race car, which was my first ever sprint car race, was for Dennis Roth.
Roth Motorsports.
Roth Motorsports. Okay. So very close family friend. Their shop is in Fresno, 5 minutes from our shop.
I didn't know they were California based.
Yep. From California. Big cattle people. They raise cattle. So drove for Dennis Roth. But yeah, he definitely paved the way for me to already kind of have stuff figured out when I got my family car.
Okay. That's good stuff. I didn't know that there was those connect. What's weird about it to me is I never think that California is like this racing hotbed, but there's so many famous drivers from there.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I was looking at the lineup. I don't know if it was for an outlaw race or for the high limit race, and they put the hometown, and it was like Brad Sweet, Elk Grove, California, Kyle Larson, Elk Grove, California, Buddy Kofoid, Pengrove, California, me, Fresno, California, Carson Macedo, Lemoore, California. Like a lot of California guys are.
Why is that, you think?
I don't know, man. Like it's weird. I think the 360 racing scene in California is massive. The local racing scene. 410s aren't quite as big. So I think it's a great start for kids to race 360s. I mean, there's 5 or 6 racetracks on any given weekend that run local 360s. And once you get to that 17, 18 year age, you have to get out of California to race at your Knoxville's, your Port Royal's, your big racetracks.
Okay. So talk me through, before we wrap this up, I'm trying to give, I want to get some people out to the track this weekend. So the World of Outlaws will be out at Knoxville on Friday and Saturday night. I'm going to try and get out there with my daughters on Saturday. I had just being like, you know enough about me, my 8-year-old took her to her first dirt race. Now she's been to an IndyCar race with me a couple times out at Iowa Speedway. I've taken her out there. I took her to a late model show over the weekend and she talked about it the whole way home. we kind of had it rigged, but we do a deal as a family. It's like you pick the driver who's going to win. Everybody's experienced that before. Yep. And the whole thing was rigged. I was telling her who to pick, but she won like 2 of the 4 features.
Yep.
So she's all into it. And I just want to get her, I want to see what she thinks of the sprint cars, see what she thinks of the Outlaws. So I would highly recommend. I actually had a guy reach out to me on Twitter today about like, if I wanted to go to my first dirt race, I would go to this one. The Nationals are great, but if you've never been to one, like this is, the crowd's not as much.
Right.
You can spread out a little bit. The weather's generally a little bit cooler. Mm-hmm. Like to me, like Friday or Saturday night this weekend's the best time.
No doubt. I mean, Nationals can be overwhelming for a first time fan. And being in Knoxville, 45 minutes from Des Moines, I mean, Knoxville Raceway is the absolute mecca of sprint car racing, which is hard to believe because it's in Knoxville, I know. But one of the nicest facilities we go to, the most organized run show where the World of Outlaws promoting it, or running it, I should say, with the best drivers in the country. So you're not going to get much better than what you get this weekend.
Do you have any good dingus stories?
Well, I don't know if I can say them, but this is actually the first year I've legally been able to go. So
that's crazy.
And it sucks.
Because, I knew you were young. I didn't know that you were that young.
Turned 21 last November. So it's really hard when you race across the street to walk into the bar with a fake ID because they know who you are. So it's hard to say, no, I'm not Gio Selzy. I didn't just race across the street. So that's a tough one, but I've never been in there before November. That's on the record. So no one can hold that against me.
We had a night. We do this thing for the Iowa State football game where there's a TV station, channel 13 here in town. And we would do, it's called RVTV, where we would take campers and stuff and we would camp in all these towns leading up to the big game. Right. And we did Knoxville 1 year. And AJ there at Dingus.
Oh my God, yeah.
He let us come after hour. We stayed there until like 4 o'clock in the morning on like a random like Tuesday night in September. And I have to say it was one of the greatest nights of my life.
Yeah. Dingus is, and again, if you want to experience Dingus, I would probably recommend going this weekend, not at Nationals. Because
I don't know, man. The stripper pole out there, it's hopping in August.
Yeah, you're going to be elbows to elbows at Nationals time all day long. So if you want to get the experience and not go crazy, this weekend would be the weekend to go.
It's amazing, though, about how that works, because like I have lifelong friends now that I met in that bar. And it's like if you've been to the Nationals as many times as I have, everybody does the same thing every Saturday at the Nationals every year.
There's no doubt, yeah.
Like, if you go to Peachtree at 3 o'clock, you're going to see the same people every year. And then they move on, and they park at the same place, and then they go to Dingus. And see, I don't do your DE features and stuff either. Yeah, no. I don't do that shit. No. I come in, I'll watch the B, and then I'll watch the A.
Yep.
I don't do qualifying. Yep. I don't do hot laps. Does that make me like an elitist dirt fan?
No, absolutely.
I don't want to sit out there for all that.
That's the, especially at Nationals when you've been drinking all week. You gotta wake up. You're about ready to start drinking around 4, 5, 6 when the races are starting, so you're ready to start again.
Can you do the 360s now that you're an outlaw?
No. So the 360 Nationals falls on the Ironman 55. So we actually race in Peavey, Missouri, Friday and Saturday of the 360 Nationals, and then we drive 5 hours back to Knoxville and race Sunday at the Capitani Classic.
Is Peavey the Kenny Wallace? Or
yes, Ken Federated Schrader? Auto Parts. Yep, he's I don't know if he promotes it or he owns it or what, but
Ken Schrader used
Ken
to.
Schrader, yes. Ken Schrader, yes. Yeah, has something to do with it.
But Kenny drives there some. He races his there, modifieds. I think he races there weekly, actually.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, man, I hope that we can do this more often. I think you and me have some cool ideas, but I love the fact that you're like in Altoona, and it's obviously a passion point for me, but I also think that it's good business because this is a growing sport and we've seen it just with our Always Race Day website, like the uptick in people. And I hope the racers are too, because without the racers, none of us yahoos can go out there and do it. It just seems like a healthier industry. And I know that it's still got a ways to go, but like, I think that we're doing some strategic things as an industry, and I hope it keeps going for you.
I agree for sure. I think it's, like you said, it's growing at an alarming pace almost with the fan engagement, and Larson coming to the races, you know, brings in those stock car fans that want to check out the sprint car races, and vice versa. It brings in dirt car fans that want to watch NASCAR.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, what's interesting to me is I remember when I was a kid, like, it was a big deal when Tony Stewart would go and, oh, no, we can't have him. You know, he's got his sponsors. And, like, what if he gets hurt? And now it's like they want the NASCAR guys out there because NASCAR needs the dirt track people.
No doubt. Yep.
It's really come a long way. Well, he's Gio Selzy. Yep. I almost did it again. I don't know why I always do that. You can watch him. It's the bright orange. Thank you for doing that too, by the way. The bright,
no worries. You cannot miss me.
It's awesome. I love it. I hate all the white cars. Like, come on, like, do something different.
Yep.
Especially when you're trying to watch it on TV. You can't miss him. He's the bright orange car. They're based out of here in Iowa. And it's fun to watch a semi-local guy. You own a home in Altoona now, so you're a local guy, and we're glad to have you around. Thanks for hopping on, man.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
If you ever get in a pit fight too, I'm your guy.
All right, got it.
All right, he's Gio. Root for him this weekend out in Knoxville. Appreciate our friends at Channel Seed here in the Channel Seed studio. And we'll be back next week with more CW Pod. Check out, if you're a golf fan, Sage Rosenfels had Zach Johnson on earlier this week on the Sage Rosenfels Experience. I know some really good basketball conversation with Jared Stansberry and Jordan Bohannon. And then got some two guys named Chris for you as well. Ian, Aiden Wyatt produced today's program. I don't know why I call him Ian. We'll be back next week. Thanks for watching, guys. Have an awesome weekend. Hopefully we see you out at the racetrack.
Iowa everywhere.